On this episode of Sidebar Forever, we kick off our celebration of Star Wars Month with a review of the first season of Disney's The Mandalorian. This Star Wars spinoff, created by Jon Favreau, stars Pedro Pascal, Nick Nolte, Gina Carano, and Carl Weathers. Now, you might notice on this episode, you're only getting two podcast hosts. Well, sometimes that is the way. And hey, if you love the show, be sure to find us on sidebarforever.com. And don't forget to follow us on our socials, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you want to drop us a line, please do so at sidebarforever@gmail.com.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
So as far as Mandalorian is concerned, we can keep this conversation brief, but I mean, I think we, like everybody else, pretty much enjoyed it, and we're all kind of pleasantly surprised by how good it was.
This is the way.
Yeah, this is the way. I have spoken.
Right?
And I think for me, you know, I was surprised that I would like it in these very small chunks that the show came in. You know, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, it's only like, you know, every episode is like maybe 30, 40 minutes. I was like, really? Oh, you got a Mando ring, yo. Oh, yeah. That shit's fire, yo.
Thanks, man.
Where'd you get it, man.
I got it from this website called Wish. It's pretty cool. I'll send you a link to it if you're interested, dude. But it's really nice, dude.
Nice.
It's really nice, dude. And it's pretty cheap, too, dude. It's not very expensive, but it was worth it. Pretty cool.
Nice.
So anyway, that goes to show my commitment to the this is the way, yeah.
Yeah, yo. I'm looking for it now online. Damn, yo.
Okay.
That derailed me, yo. For those who don't know, we'll post a link or an image to go along with it, but D just on his Skype just held up his kiss of the ring hand and
Right.
He has a nice Mandalorian ring, yo. That's pretty awesome, yo.
Yeah,
it's definitely awesome, but I was surprised, you know. One, I was thrown off when they was like, oh, it's like 30 minutes. I was like, what? But it functioned very, very much like an old 70s TV show, an old 70s Western, like Bonanza or Gunsmoke or, you know, Have Gun Will Travel, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the stories were uber duber super simple, which was fine. And it was actually interesting, too, that the fact that the main character, you know, you don't even get to see his visage until maybe, you know, seven episodes in or something like that. You know, very much towards the tail end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what do you think? What do you think are some of the things that really made this, you know, The Mandalorian work? You know, obviously, you know, created and written by Jon Favreau, that really made it work and made it sing for you, man, as a hardcore fan, because you're more of a hardcore fan than I am.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. First off, there's an underlying cult of extended universe individuals out there, and people that are involved with, I say cult in the best way, not in a bad way.
Sure.
Let's say followers and interest people interested in Star Wars have always enjoyed Boba Fett ever since the Star Wars Holiday Special that people poo-poo all the time for various reasons. Arguably, you know, rightfully so or not so much, the introduction of Boba Fett there. has been an interest in the bounty hunter. So much so that George put him into Empire Strikes Back. He wasn't initially supposed to be inside Empire Strikes Back, to my understanding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that worked very well. And then to see his final come up at the bottom of the Sarlacc pit, of course, arguably, in Return of the Jedi. So there's this built-in interest in the Mandalorian and the way of the Mandalorian. And
but I think that is more the hardcore fans than it is maybe a Lucifer fan like myself, right?
Well, I mean, no, people, I mean, well, I mean, you tell me, you're a Lucifer fan. I'm not. You know, I enjoyed the idea of what the bounty hunter was and that the fact that his armor meant more than just that was his choice at the dime store. You know, this is not just...
this is what was available.
right. Right, this isn't like some kind of Navy surplus store you went to and got stuff off the rack because you could afford it. This was actually the armor of people that chose to follow a certain way and certain ideals inside of a religion, so to speak. You know, like he says in the movie, says in the show, it's like, you know, guns are my religion. I'm not gonna give you these guns to the Jawas. You know, he says that the Jawas, like, you know, you can have these, you know.
And he even says, yeah, which, you know, it's not a race, it's a creed. So it's kind of like a brotherhood or sisterhood or a sorority, fraternity to some extent. But certainly with, you know, with more, you know, with different ideals in mind and pursuits. But maybe you're right. And I think that definitely did work. And for me, again, because the episodes were so short, I think one of the things that brought me in was they could build upon the mythology and the lore of the Mandalorians episode by episode, but because they didn't have a whole lot of time, they didn't go into a whole lot of exposition. You know, by the second episode, people were online, you know, saying, I've spoken and this is the way. And, you know, we don't really know why they say that. We just know they say that. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things where the theater of the mind takes over and, you know, the nerds in the suits in Hollywood, not even the nerds, the suits in Hollywood who want to make everything super fucking simple. Let's spoon feed everything because I'm confused by this. I think that people who are fans are going to be confused by this. Go fuck yourself. We're not confused. Just make us, just show us that this is cool and we'll believe it's cool. Show us that this is important or that this is something that we're to remember and we'll remember it. You know,
and do a degree of sincerity that it was accomplished by, like you said, Jon Favreau and Lucas's right hand man in animation for a long time, Jay Filoni, you know, co-wrote the show, and part of the success of Star Wars going forward is going to be Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, you know, that's because they understand good storytelling and they understand what fans want to see and also understand what will push the stories forward. I think one of the things that was evident from the beginning was that this is going to be a long haul in terms of how they're approaching it. As the Mandalorian approaches that hovel where his first bounty is, we see him pick up, you know, it very much looks like, you know, an Eastwood film, you know, or like you would see inside of, you know, spaghetti Western, you know,
absolutely.
And, you know, and it was good for that reason. But then what really threw you off and what made everybody gravitate towards, of course, was the fact that the delivery by that Polish director who was talking about the bounty. Oh, what's his name?
You talking about Werner Herzog?
Werner Herzog. Yeah. He had the kind of gravitas
that you needed. I would like to see the child.
Right, exactly. You know? But the thing is, though, what's cool about him, dude, is like when he was talking about the kid was 50 years old. I mean, he didn't say it was a kid. He said that the bounty was 50 years old. Mm-hmm. Okay, 50 years old. So who is this? You know, what are you talking about? And then when you finally get there to see a Yoda like youngling, which he's not baby Yoda, we see a Yoda like youngling.
Right.
You know, and that turned the volume up to 10, where it kind of was, okay, this is baseline good. This is a four or five at best right now where we're headed. But then when Baby Yoda appears,
right,
everybody went ape shit. It was instant memes.
Because,
it was instant.
We didn't know it was there. It's like they just dropped the series.
Right.
There was hardly any leakage or any kind of a tease or any of that. And we didn't know. And all of a sudden it was like, what the? And like you said, it just went me. I mean, he was ripe for memes, yep. for sure, and still is exactly. to this very day. But I think the other thing, too, was the fact that this was Yoda, sort of, but it was cute Yoda. It was, right. you know, a sweet, innocent-looking Yoda, you know, as opposed to old wrinkled-ass, you know, fucking wise, I kick your ass in 2 seconds, Yoda. You know, it was it was a different, and it was a good balance, you know, much in the way of Lone Wolf and Cub, of, you know, this seasoned warrior who is not very verbose and, you know, and keeps it close to the vest. But, you know, we see that heart side being revealed by his relationship with the child. Yeah. You know, which is actually what the character is referred to in technical terms, just the child.
Which is good, because that's what he is, essentially. I mean, he's no more than that. He doesn't even speak at this point. I mean, his verbiage is nothing. I mean, all he does is do baby stuff. I mean, with the exception of like poop and piss himself, he doesn't do any of that, obviously. I mean, we don't know that, you know, but he doesn't. I mean, all he does is, you know, do cuddly things. So you see, you're obviously going to gravitate towards that character. One of the things I find interesting about The Mandalorian 2, and what they did wisely by putting a Yoda-type character in it, is it instantly drew you back into the overall saga. It was the connective tissue between the Star Wars, all of the Star Wars films. The fact that this kind of character could exist immediately made you question what's going to happen next. Where with the Mandalorian, you always saw the Mandalorian as being a bounty hunter, a work for hire type dude. He went after each bounty.
You don't think that the Mandalorian himself is the connected, would have been the connective tissue in the sense of Boba Fett, etc.?
I don't. I mean, I think yes, but I think the fact they allowed it to him to care about something other than the money is what made it better.
And they were going to have to do that, because it'd be like, okay. Yeah. It just would be boring watching him, like, either kill motherfuckers take motherfuckers and beat them across the head and then drive them across the galaxy and then dump them on the ground and then collect a bag of coins and then walk off in the sunset. Like, okay, we can't do that every week, you know?
Right. That would get real old real fast. But they still built upon his character outside of Yoda, too, which was good. They gave him a somewhat of an old, you know, cadre of questionable villains he hung with, or questionable people he hung with. He went back to various haunts to get more bounties with, you know, characters established by, you know, Apollo, you know, Carl Weathers,
Greek Targa,
you know, right, Greek Targa, you know,
or Greek Karga, excuse you know, me, I'm sorry,
Greek Karga, yeah. And you know, I liked the cast. I mean, the fact that I care so much about Nick Nolte's character, dude, which I didn't think I would. You know, and his demise, dude. That was heartfelt. I felt that. That was rude, dude.
I did too. I was like, you know, and I didn't catch it was Nick Nolte at first, because he sounded so sweet and so like kind and like and was such a stand up guy.
Right. And then I realized, but in a gruff way.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And then I was, that's Nick Nolte. You know.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But as kind of getting into some of the cast and the cast of characters, as we mentioned earlier, written and directed by Favreau and produced by Dave Filoni. And then Pedro Pascal as the Mandalorian.
Right.
Carl Weathers is Greef Karga. Werner Herzog is the client. Mm-hmm. Nick Nolte's Quill. Taika Waititi is IG-11. The the cool ass fucking bounty droid.
Kick ass IG-11. Yeah,
yeah. Gina Carano as Cara Dune. Yeah. Actually, not doing a bad job, not a great job, but not doing a bad job. And then, you know, a bunch of other cameo appearances, Ming-Na and Amy Sedaris and Clancy Brown and Bill Burr.
Right.
And then Giancarlo Esposito as Moff Gideon.
Who killed it, yo.
Oh, yeah.
I liked it. I mean, the end, dude, with the dark lightsaber?
Yeah.
Sir.
Yeah.
Sir.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, in the directors of the episodes, Dave directed one, Rick Famuyiwa directed one, Deborah Chow, Bryce Dallas Howard, and then Taika Waititi. And I think Favreau directed the first one, if I'm not mistaken. I thought he did. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay. I might have that wrong. But what were you saying? I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, no. I just think that I think that the choices, the people he chose, the people that were chosen to give, you know, extemporaneous dialogue, were the right ones, because those they actually brought you back into the saga. Like I said, Werner Herzog and Giancarlo Esposito, those guys are known for giving like really solid quality. You know,
they're the gravitas. They are the
gravitas.
Yeah, they are given the. Which, they're the ones. They're the heavies to give it weight. You know,
right? And they have quotables. Well, I'm like, I can't think of any quotable in Rise of Skywalker, any of the last series of Star Wars films, besides the one that was been repeated already by Ian McDiarmid in the previous, you know,
really?
Series. No, I mean the whole thing with Ben telling old girl Rey that you're nothing. Yeah, that's what, you don't belong in this saga. You're nothing. That's all. Oh, okay. What? That's all.
So for me, I actually did remember there were things that were quotable for me. You know, Maz saying, okay. Well, that is a question for another time. Okay. When she says, the future that you seek is in front of you. It's not behind you.
Okay.
There was a point in, even in Rogue One where, you know, where they, you know, he says, you know, you've been in prisons, but some people carry their prisons around with them.
Okay.
I mean, so there were quotable things in there.
Okay.
But again, I mean, you're more solidly like, okay, the original and the impression it made upon you. I always look for that in films. I find those in all kinds of movies.
Okay.
You know, quotable lines and things that stand out to me, you know.
Okay.
Even in John Wick, there's a line that Willem Dafoe's character Marcus says where he says, you know, I forget the exact quote, but he says something to the effect of, there's no good, there's no bad, there's just more days like this sprinkled among the rest. You know, talking about when John Wick's wife dies. But anyway, I'm digressing, so.
No, that's cool. I mean, I'm glad you could find the quotables in there, dude. I just, for me, it's just something that has that kind of overall, like, impactful wisdom to me. And it, I may have missed it because I was taken out by various other storytelling faux pas or lack of interest. I'm not sure.
I think the other thing too is these last three movies
mm-hmm.
are a little fuller and faster paced
mm-hmm.
than the original trilogy.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean? The pacing of the stories and how long you live with the characters and the moments are just briefer. Mm-hmm. You know, they're you know, this is, you know, you know, MTV happened after this. So we, all of our brains tuned to, you know, change it up quickly. I'm getting bored, motherfucker. Hurry up.
Right. Next video.
Yeah.
You know?
So
yeah. Good point. But anyway, back to Mandalorian.
Yeah, back to Mando. They couldn't do it. They're all jealous of you, Mando. Only you can do it.
Exactly. So true. What I want you to do is take some of your earnings, and there's a nice little, you know, say they want a hump bar I want you to go to, and relax yourself.
Exactly. Like Carl Weathers was like mad over the top as I'll tell you what, Mando, put the bounty down and I'll think about letting you pass.
Right. He was great though, man. He pulled it off, dude. He was great.
He was, but I mean, when Mando shot him and then he showed up later, you're probably surprised I'm still alive, Mando. Okay, is that how you're gonna approach this? I mean,
right?
But I did like Carl Weathers, and I did like that he was in the final standoff with Kara and Mando and the child in that cantina or whatever with Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah,
you know, letting them know I'm about to hand out some ass whoopings if y'all don't give up the bounty and come out.
Right. Yeah, man.
So, did you think it worked that they finally showed us Pedro Pascal's face later on? Did you think that was satisfying, or do you think they could have gone the whole series without showing us his what he looked like?
I think they could have gone the whole season without showing his visage, dude. Honestly, because you know what.
What?
I had a funny Beyond Thunderdome moment, dude. When the little guy is knocked off the when Blaster goes inside the ring and fights Max, and Max beats him with a hammer and knocks his helmet off, And it's just, there's obviously mentally deranged or mentally disturbed child man underneath it, and he's got this really this really kind of he has this kind of bloodied, you know, dizzy look about him. You know, I have that kind of look of the Mandel. I mean, Pedro Pascal is a handsome dude, you know, and he plays a character in Game of Thrones that gets his head gets his head crushed. And this is not what I saw there. I saw, you know, arguably some of the women, you know, would say, okay, he was still just as handsome as what was there. But the bloody mess that was him, because the way the impact, you know, hit him in the helmet or whatever the case may be, you know, it was not nice to look at. And the first thing I thought of was like, okay, this guy looks like he's got some kind of mental issues. Like he's, you know, like special, you know. And that was not the look that I was expecting to see. You know, it was weird to me. So, but then I immediately adjusted to it. Maybe it was the configuration of the helmet and the sweatiness of being on that helmet and the hair and the matted blood and things like that. But, you know, I like the fact that, you know, he was able to get treatment, obviously, because he needed it at that point. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, no living thing could actually look at a Mandalorian except for their spouse or whatever the case may be, according to their religion. But the fact that IG-11 wasn't living made it okay, you know, because he's not going to report back anything. So that was nice. That was a nice element to it.
You know, the thing I didn't like the fact that he was so hung up on, you know, a droid. Once you program a droid to do whatever it's going to do, it can't go against its nature. It's like, motherfucker, it's a machine. This is software. What the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
They reformatted this bitch. He's good.
Right. But, you know, the thing is, though, being the fact that his parents were killed by those war droids, you know, that was his whole hang up. You know, I get it.
He's basically a droid racist, is what he is.
Right. Yes, yes. Kind of, sort of. You can say that.
But,
That's not an okay thing either.
I know everybody was kind of up in arms, too, as far as memes and things that kind of went viral when, Jason Sudeikis' character was kind of uncredited as the, as kind of like the foot soldier. And they go and get Baby Yoda, and he punches Baby Yoda, yo. Like, the first time he did I was like,
several times, yo.
Is he punching a fucking baby? Yo, baby?
That was wrong, dude.
What is your what is your malfunction, bro?
It's true, man. It's true. We laugh like it's funny, dude. But the reality was, this is not a child that had fangs. He wasn't bearing anything. He wasn't a predator in any stretch of imagination. For them to treat him in such a callous fashion, did was jarring, dude. A couple of times, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's like, hit the baby in the bag. Is that a real game? Hit the baby in the bag?
Yeah, yo. Come on. Him and Adam Pauly was the other uncredited goon, basically. And I was like,
right?
Are they having snappy patter and banter and then punching a baby in between, motherfucker? What?
Yeah, punch the baby in the bag, yo.
Yeah, it's true.
And then their characters go back to I think it was like a little like one shot Star Wars comic when there was two troopers that were arguing and get kind of like a Laurel Hardy type manner.
Yeah.
Doing these things. So yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that the show did well to have a short season? Because I know you tend to like things that are a little longer, but I prefer, like, really for me, 10 episodes is about all I need. If you can't do it in 10, you know, I mean, 10 times 10 is 100. That's 100%. If you can't do it in 10 episodes, anything beyond that, it typically ends up being padding. And even though I think your point is correct, where in the first episode, it started a little slow, and about a third of the way in, I was like, okay. And then once Baby Yoda comes in, then it ramps up because you see, like you say, you see him kind of like he shoots the droid, and he's like, you know, the droid's like, we must kill the bounty or whatever. I forget what the droid says, and then he shoots him in the head and blows his head off. Right. And then you realize, oh, okay, he's kind of sweet on this kid, you know?
Right.
So I think, you know, having a short season was fine for me. I think it gave all of the directors, and they have some really great, you know, directors, and they all did, I think, a terrific job in their own ways. And having it be short, I think it was fine. But what would you?
I mean, in overall scheme of things, I was satisfied because the stories had meat to them. Mm-hmm. Each one was, there were no wasted episodes. Each thing built upon the character of the Mandalorian, mm-hmm. and upon the Star Wars universe in a way. So that worked for me. And if you think about it in terms of live television with the commercials, edits in between, I mean, we didn't get any of that. So essentially television is like 30 to 45 minutes anyway with commercial interruptions. Mm-hmm. As far as actual episodes go, and they extended to an hour with 15 minutes of damn commercials. So the fact it was uninterrupted by commercials made it, you know, more palpable to me. So
I agree.
But I don't like I still was thrown off by the first. I paid $60 for this whole year, and I'm getting like basically 10 episodes of something I'm really gonna watch. Because right. I haven't gone back to watch any of the any of the Disney Plus Marvel movies yet.
And you really, haven't.
I mean, I think I watched Endgame again, but that was all. That's all I've seen. I haven't watched any other movies that are on there because I really hadn't had the time or the overall interest and commitment to it. You know, because I know the story, so I don't have to go back and watch it again. You know what I mean? It's like this. That's one of the things you were talking about earlier. You know, what's the rewatchability in these things? And it's like almost like it's not really built into the way things are told now for the most part. My battery's getting low. You know.
Okay. Yeah, you might be right there. And to kind of conclude, yeah, I do think that they certainly could have done more, but I think for what they did, yeah, it was satisfying, and it did build upon, like you said, The Mandalorian. By the end of the mm-hmm. 8th episode, we definitely have a different Mando than we had from the very beginning. And even mm-hmm. the going back to the Western comparison, or even like, you know, Lone Wolf and Cub and that, the names of the episodes could very well have translated easily, you know, into either a Western or a South. Definitely. You know, The Mandalorian, The Child, The Sin, The Sanctuary, The Gunslinger, The Prisoner, The Reckoning, Redemption. You know, mm-hmm. so those are all weighty, you know, very definitive titles that, you know, that you know, they lead you down the path of, you know, where they wanted you to go. So
that concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.